You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hi, Mickey.
Hey, Bob.
You're dressed up. Oh, and you've got a guitar.
I thought I would do a medley of songs from my favorite folk singer, Robert Zimmerman.
Known as Bob Dylan.
Because that did us such good last week when I played a Bob Dylan song. And
yeah, Mickey, I gotta say, you're feeling surprisingly festive today, you know? Not everyone in America is, but proceed.
Well, I thought I had to have some sort of gimmick.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay, you don't want my big gimmick.
No.
We're all serious here, okay.
No. I would never dissuade you from serenading us.
No, I can tell you what your mood is. Okay, don't worry about it.
Well,
never mind. It's hard to believe that Tuesday was the most important election of my lifetime, but it seems like 2 years ago.
Georgia, you mean?
Georgia, yeah. So go ahead.
Well, how are you feeling about our president?
Well, he's fulfilled all the predictions of his critics about his character, I think, at the last minute.
Well, there were glimmers, I would say, even before that. But
I don't know. I think your friend it's a weird guy, whereas Steve Bannon exercises a calming force on him.
Steve Bannon exercise a calming force?
I think he was better when he had people around him.
Oh, I see.
Who kept him cabined in, and Bannon was one of those people. And he's gradually eliminated one by one. And not that he ever had around him people who told him no. I mean, Corey Lewandowski didn't tell him no. And he, you know, got rid of him early. But he got rid of everybody who would be a no man, who would say, no, you can't do that. And who he would listen to. And he was left with Jared, his relative, who he didn't listen to and who gave him bad advice. And nobody else who stood up to him. So he surrounded himself by yes men and gradually veered into his own, you know, what maybe you could say was his real personality, but previously it had been cabined up.
So what were the things they should have said no to this week? And what were the, I noticed on Twitter you were kind of, you were dismissing the idea that he could be accused of inciting.
Right. I don't think that speech that he gave on the Ellipse was an inciting speech. You listen to it and there's, you know, it'd be a slam dunk in court. I mean, he didn't say anything that was inciting. He said we should go peacefully, let our voices be heard. Obviously, he intended to pressure Pence. But, you know, you're allowed to have a big demonstration to pressure a politician. I mean, Martin Luther King had a big peaceful demonstration to pressure people into passing the Civil Rights Act. Perfectly reasonable thing to do. You can question his goal, but you can't say he was inciting a riot. That doesn't mean he's innocent. You know, all the newspapers said Trump incites riot. I don't think he incited the riot.
Well, no,
you can say he set up this whole situation over a long period of time where he said, we're going to have this big thing on January 6th and it's going to be wild. And, you know, he attracted all his people there and didn't pay much attention to what they were going to do. And that he's culpable in that way. And sure.
Okay, but you criticize the New York Times headline, mob incited by Trump storms
Trump
Capitol.
Trump incites mob. There was an earlier one that was even worse. Big headline, Trump incites mob.
Well, as you know, I have been much more than the average progressive critical of New York Times headlines that I thought were too uncritically kind of pro-resistance and anti-Trump. This one, when I first saw it, I thought, well, that's maybe borderline, but I don't. He certainly incited them. I'm not saying in the legal sense of inciting violence, but the word incite means to stir up, to spur on. He stirred them up and he, And, you know, you've quoted, it's true that the word
peace. He didn't stir them up as a mob. He stirred them up to go and peacefully let their voices be heard. And most of them did that. That's what most of them did. And there was this, you know, vanguard of asshole, violent people who as in all demonstrations, you know, tried to carry the demonstration in a different direction.
Yeah, but I mean, my view is he has been, in a certain sense, inciting this ever since November 3rd. I mean, you know, and by the way, in the speech itself, it's true that he used the word peacefully at some point when he was talking about, but, you know, he said, all of us here today do not want to see our election victory stolen by emboldened radical left Democrats, which is what they're doing, and stolen by fake news, blah, blah, blah. We will never give up. We will never concede. And so he says, and then in this passage where he says it's time to march to the Capitol, it is up to Congress to confront this egregious assault on our democracy. After this, we're going to walk down, and I'll be there with you. Turned out to be a lie, but anyway, we're going to walk down to the Capitol, and we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women. We're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them, because you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength. You know, look, you could parse the literal meaning of that. He did then throw in the word peacefully, but that is not my big complaint anyway. It's there's a larger sense in which he and his allies like Steve Bannon and Rudy Giuliani have been setting the stage for this at least since the election.
That's what I said.
How culpable is he? Should he be impeached?
If there were 2 months left, well, there should be some sort of no confidence vote possible. The way you don't have to go through, is it a high crime or misdemeanor? And, you know, you don't have to go through, is he unable, unfit to serve under the 25th Amendment? You just say, sorry, you've so alienated us, and there should be a high bar, like three quarters of the Congress should have to vote for it, that we're going to get rid of you. And certainly, that if there were such a mechanism, that mechanism should be activated. He's behaving completely erratically, and who knows what he would do if he had a month. You know, should he be impeached now? There's probably enough time, but I'm sort of open to the idea that he should be impeached. I mean, sure. If there were a month, yes. If there were a month left, yes. But, you know, 10 days, is not going to happen. It's useful as a deterrent. It seemed to have whipped him into shape. I mean, he did concede last night. He's issuing all sorts of hostage tape, statements. It's hard to believe it'll last for 10 days about how he's going to ensure a peaceful transition. So the threat had its effect. But sure. I mean, I don't have any truck for the guy anymore. I mean, in terms of his utility to the country, and he's a threat. So
there is a sense in which he more immediately incited the mob. And I don't think this has gotten enough attention. I mean, first of all, you know, he apparently knew something he wasn't telling that he didn't tell the crowd. According to the reporting, Pence had told him before his speech on the Mall, that Pence was not going to do what he wanted. The crowd was still in suspense about that. And so Trump knew, first of all.
Not if they read Maggie Haberman's Twitter feed.
Well, but Pence himself did not announce it until 1 p.m.
Right.
These people don't trust Maggie Haberman. I mean, you know, Trump knew that it would become evident. I mean, very soon, you know, that as these people were marching over there, they were probably going to find out very soon that Pence had betrayed them. And like everyone else, he had set this up as an epic thing by saying, if Mike Pence comes through for us. But that's not the worst part. I mean, it's pretty bad that he was sending them over there knowing they were going to get into a very bad mood at some point over there. But here's the really egregious part, okay? Sometime after 2 p.m., and one reason I hate that Twitter and Facebook keeps playing, you know, kind of speech police so much is that it's hard to reconstruct the exact time of this tweet. But it was after the barriers had been breached, after there were people in the Capitol. It was after 2 p.m., I think well after 2 p.m. Trump tweets, No, and you know he's watching on TV. You know he knows there's people right. in the Capitol. And he tweets, Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done to protect our country and our Constitution. So knowing these guys are in the Capitol, and Mike Pence is in the Capitol so far as he knows, he is incite. Now, that is true incitement. And I think in a, I think that alone is grounds for impeachment. I really do. And by the way, there was a New York Times reporter. I didn't catch her name, but I was listening to a Daily podcast this morning, and she had been following the far right for a while. You know, in the we can talk about security
and
later.
They said they were going to hang him.
Well, she was following this in real time, and she was monitoring the not Parler but Gab, another one of the right wing social media things. She was monitoring both a video live stream from within the Capitol and conversation involving some people in the Capitol.
Right.
And she says, like, within a couple of minutes of Trump's tweet, on Parler, she's seeing somebody tweeting, Pence is a traitor. And then she hears the chant, and I heard they played this, of guys in the Capitol saying, where's Mike Pence? Find Mike Pence, okay? Trump is directly responsible for that. You had a mob looking for the vice president in the Capitol, directly incited by the president. Now, I don't think, I'm not sure impeachment is a good idea politically, but to my mind, there's no doubt that there are the grounds for impeachment. Trump knew exactly what he was doing.
That's a very good point, but if the timeline checks out, and one reason, one possible reason people think that that cop shot that woman, obviously he shot her because there were important people inside who he was supposed to protect, but it's also possible that Pence was around there and that they were being especially nervous around Pence. Trump wanted Pence to be killed?
I'm not saying that. Who knows what's going on in that brain?
I'm saying for him to not understand
that he was increasing the level of physical danger faced by the vice president, Trump would have to be even stupider than I think he is, and I think he's extremely stupid, okay? He's smart enough and aware enough to know that. And by the way, according to some of the reporting, you know, monitoring this thing within the White House, he was actually happy that the Capitol was being stormed.
Well,
that was his first reaction.
You heard a lot of reports said that, and then Maggie Haberman also reported, who was sort of the voice of God, not infallible, but she has the best sources, that he was upset that the people looked so tacky, which is also a Trumpy thing to do. So, but yes, I mean, the most obvious impeachable ground is his delay in squashing this thing for a couple of hours.
Well, what you mean, was he withholding and not saying things that would squash it?
Or calling out the guard. I mean, he delayed it for an hour, I think.
Do we know that he was the source of that delay?
I think it's been reported. I mean, they eventually had to work around him somehow. I don't quite know how they did that.
Let me say one other thing about the woman who was killed. Well, two other things. Have you seen the video of the killing?
I've seen two videos.
So, first of all, as for the shooting, I always wonder why they don't shoot in the legs or the lower torso if all they really need to do is stop the person and send a message to others, which would have worked. But leaving that aside, I mean, he must have gone for apparently a headshot. I guess he hit her in the neck. Leaving aside where he shot her, I think the shooting was completely justified, don't you? I mean, they were getting closer and closer to the heart of Congress, apparently, and this was a threshold that had not been breached, and there was a broken window now. Nobody had come through it. Now, it's true that there were cops on the other side of it. In other words, on the outside,
right,
where tons of rioters were, who were trying to calm the situation down. But you can see where the cop is who shoots her. He's on the inside in an area that has not been breached yet.
Did you see the Washington Post one where they identify people and they stop the video and identify people?
I saw a Bellingcat thing where they showed three videos from three different angles simultaneously.
The cops had been cleared out by the time she was shot. They had chased the cops away.
Well, there was one cop. Well, certainly from the point of view of the cop who had the gun, he could not necessarily see any cops at all. What he could see is about is just rider after rider.
They were trying to
get into the inner sanctum, and he had to shoot her.
I'd rather he shot her in the leg.
He had to shoot her.
I think it was justified. My point is they chased away the cops on the outside and they were about to break in. There was one especially crazy guy who was the guy who should have been shot, who was breaking the glass and everything. And she just stuck her hand. She was going for it and stuck her hand through. I think she was the first person to stick her hand through.
Well, and so, she started crawling through the window. She got up and started. That's when she was shot. She was entering. She was becoming the first person to cross the threshold.
I agree with that. The interesting wrinkle. But go ahead, say what you're on a roll.
I want to use her to make one more anti-Trump point. I feel sorry for this woman. Okay. She was a long-standing military veteran. She came home. And by the way, one problem with all the wars we keep getting into is there is in some small but non-trivial number of returning veterans from these wars, and this goes back to Vietnam at least, a radicalizing kind of tendency. But, she, as of, I guess, at some point became a QAnoner. Okay. And Trump, has had, plenty of chances to say this QAnon thing is bullshit. The only thing I heard him, and he would know because the whole scenario is that he's involved in rooting out pedophiles, right? According to the QAnon theory.
Right.
So he would know it's bullshit. But the only time I've heard him say anything when they ask him is he said, I don't know about QAnon. I do know they support me. That's it. And so this woman's descent into something approaching madness, I think he is complicit in. And in other ways as well. But he's just been in so many ways an indefensible president. Go ahead.
That was very – I don't know. You people draw chains of responsibility and some of them are more tenuous than others. It was definitely irresponsible of him not to repudiate QAnon. I agree.
Final thing is so that we can drag Steve Bannon into this. And again, I'm not suggesting a specific causal link here, but what this woman, Ashley Babbitt, who died, wrote the night before this was, nothing will stop us. They can try and try and try, but the storm is here and is descending on Washington in 24 hours, dark to light. And this kind of Mauna Kean thing is just 100% Bannon, to some extent Trump. And I just want to play you this, and this is, it's not that dramatic, this audio, but it's just so typical of Bannon. And this is from the broadcast he was doing while people were waiting for Trump to come. So for all we know, she was listening to this. She probably wasn't, although I'll bet you anything she was a fan of his War Room podcast. And here's the...
He's not particularly a QAnon person, though, is he?
No. He's actually careful, and he's even been careful since this about not saying it was necessarily Antifa. He's actually careful on those fronts. He knows which boundaries he shouldn't cross. And this isn't even him talking. This is just kind of a typical guest. I mean, you hear him in the course of this saying amen or something, but this is just kind of typical scene-setting rhetoric. Again, this is not long before Trump starts talking.
I've spoken to, in a certain way, their hearts are kind of breaking right now. They're watching this honorable country based upon constitutional government and the rule of law, and they see it cratering before their eyes. And I think the thought on everybody's mind is, will Mike Pence do his duty? Will Mike Pence stand up for the right and justice? And when you look back to George Washington, what does he say? And this is all we want. Truth will ultimately prevail where pains is taken to bring it to light. The American people just want to see the receipts.
Also, Steve, this is a big audience of people. This wouldn't be a bad time 2 hours before Vice President Pence gets there to humble themselves before God and pray for the
Amen.
Vice President.
Amen.
He has a lot of dark forces around him.
Amen.
And then this is a battle between Amen. Light and darkness.
The force of the children of light and the force of darkness.
And also this is the feast of the Epiphany.
The first guy talking is not Bannon. It's his co-host, Jack Maxey, who is come a little closer than Bannon. Bannon has not come close to explicitly welcoming violence, I would say. Maxie occasionally has seemed to border on that, but you know, I could go on. It's just disturbing.
But what do you think Bannon's plan was if this hadn't happened and Pence had done what he did? And then is the idea to then vilify Pence and make Pence the devil incarnate and
sure.
blame everything on Pence?
And the other people. I mean, you know, I don't know if he had serious hopes of Pence coming through for them.
No. He may have been deluded.
He may have been. It's hard to say.
Bannon. Bannon couldn't have been deluded. But
you don't think Bannon could have been?
No. He's not an idiot.
Well, then it's all the more indefensible because he led them to believe. I mean, that as of that morning, he was like, it's all on Pence. He can come through for us. But it's, you know, he's either in the forces of dark or the forces of light. We'll see.
I don't think Bannon was in any real suspense as to what Pence would do.
I mean, we will. I'll save this for the Parrot Room. But I did learn in hearing him interview Trump's constitutional law guy, Eastman, that the argument the Trump side had for wanting Pence to do something for them was a little more subtle than just reject the electors. It's a long story. But in any event, you're probably right.
And the constitutional idea that Pence had no authority is, I think, implausible. I mean, there are you can come up with situations where, and there have been situations in American history, apparently, where there are disputed elections, states, and weird bunches of electors, and you know, we would defend the vice president or whoever was in charge rejecting some electors. You know, one example: what if Gore had clearly won Florida by 100 votes, and the Republican legislature had sent Republican Bush electors in 2000? Is it the vice president's duty just to open and count? As Mike Lee said, the Constitution's very vague. I think we would defend him having some discretion there.
I don't think the Constitution's vague. I mean, it's funny that, you know, a big line here is they're trying to convince Pence that, hey, the Electoral Count Act of 18 whatever is unconstitutional, so we need to go back to the Constitution. Well, read the damn Constitution. I don't see any kind of basis in that part of the Constitution that describes the counting of the electoral votes for the vice president doing anything other than counting them. I mean, remember, they say, you know, we leave it to the states to certify the votes they want to certify. They did that. They sent them to Congress. This was not a year in which any state sent more than one set of electors. And one of the dishonesties of Bannon has been to talk as if some states have since November 3rd said, hold on, we would like to look into this further. No, they have put enough political pressure on to get, a majority of Republicans in the Arizona Senate, which isn't a majority of the Arizona Senate, to send a letter asking for that. And they got the majority leader of the Pennsylvania Senate. You know, these are all Republicans who finally came under enough political pressure. They had to do something. But there's no case in which the actual state, the legislature, or the governor, much less both, was asking Pence to hold up. So it's all bullshit. It's all bullshit.
But I admit I have not read those constitutional provisions. I'm going off on a article by Jonathan Turley, which seemed to make sense, where he implied that Trump's argument was not completely insane, that there are circumstances, not this one, where you would want Pence to reject some electors.
I can imagine circumstances.
What is the mechanism under which the Florida scenario I outlined where those delegates get rejected? How does it get thrown into the House?
I believe if they are duly certified by the state and there is no ambiguity in that state doesn't send two sets of electors, there's no confusion over who the authorized delegation of electors is, I don't see anything they can do. Now what the administration wanted them to do, this is the subtle part. I guess I'll get into it now. What they wanted Pence to do is don't reject the electors, just stop everything and say, I'm not going to count anything until we get this 10 days of study that Ted Cruz is asking for. Well, the problem with that, among others apparently, is that the Electoral Count or Vote Act or whatever of 18-whatever is explicit that once this session of counting begins, it cannot end. You can't have a second session after a long period of study. It's explicit about that. And so, and Pence mentioned that in his reasoning.
There's no mechanism in my hypothetical for Bush not being president, even though Gore won the election in Florida. There has to be. I think there is some mechanism other than Pence. I don't know what it is, but I think there must be some mechanism.
Well, like, I mean, remember, first of all, that one came before the review of the Supreme Court, before the Electoral College had been selected, right? Florida.
In Bush versus Gore, right.
Right.
But in my hypothetical, the Republican legislature in Florida did what it was threatening to do, which is, even if you say Gore had won, we are going to send Bush electors. That's what they said. I think that's part of what drove the court to do what it did. But let's suppose that this is a hypothetical. That's what happened. They send electors. They send Bush electors, even though Gore won. And there's no mechanism for correcting that? That's insane.
I don't believe so, unless somebody wants to take it to the courts. I mean, that's where it would be adjudicated, I think.
Yeah, well, that's your mechanism. I don't know. I'd have to reread this Turley thing. I thought he had some other mechanism, but
well, in any event, this is not what we have. We don't have a single state, and Bannon talks as if he says the states are now asking for this. No, not a single state is.
Well,
asking
anyway,
this.
Yeah,
we
anyway,
don't have that.
Pence did what he did, so and it was a reasonable thing to do. So, But I don't think Bannon really thought Pence was going to do anything else.
No, I mean, Bannon's dishonesty is one of the reasons to consider him a very bad person.
Trump seems to think he can strong arm anybody into doing anything. And maybe his history in the hotel industry led him to think that that was true. But he's learned that that's not true. He couldn't even strong arm Mr. Raffensperger. If I could push a button and get rid of him, I would get rid of him. If I could, if there were an instant impeachment mechanism, why not? Although then Bannon wouldn't get his pardon.
So if you knew what you know now, you wouldn't have voted for him?
I didn't say that. The question for me is whether I can still hate all the people who are anti-Trump, even though their predictions about his character have been proven out at the end of his presidency. And I guess,
you know,
I can argue we got 3 good years out of him before he fucked up with the pandemic.
It's so funny that you say that. I'm almost surprised you're surprised by the way he behaved. Because to me, the only thing is that the occasion for him to behave like this had not arisen yet. This is exactly what you expect from. I mean, it's maybe a little worse, but it's like,
I guess, yeah. I wasn't sure that the occasion would arise, and I guess. I mean, it didn't arise for 3 years, really. I mean, we saw it simmering in the background. People said that's how he was, and I always assumed that there was some evidence that he wasn't quite as crazy as Maggie Haberman led us to believe. But now he is fulfilling all her predictions.
So,
It's impossible for me to believe that he's going to last 10 days without kicking up some kind of fuss. Unless they actively sedate him.
You mean like on the international stage or what?
I don't know what stunt he's going to pull. He's going to do something.
Yeah,
He's going to visit the border, which is fairly harmless, I think.
I say let him cross.
But, I mean, he's more imaginative than we are, so he's going to come up with something.
I think it was a mistake for Nancy Pelosi to announce that she talked to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, because that's just like, you know, waving a red flag before a bull.
Yeah, I tweeted, some guy mentioned that if you want to encourage a coup, this is the way to do it.
Well, there's not going to be a coup, but if you want to encourage him to launch some war on somebody.
Well, if you want to encourage Trump to think they're conspiring against him, and he better conspire back.
He couldn't muster a coup. I mean, especially after this. I mean, a full-fledged coup would... Well, the military wouldn't support it.
True.
Now, although I will say, you know, what do you think of the mystery of the missing security? I mean, there was no plan.
That's what I wanted to talk about. There are these two videos, both of which are very striking. In one video, I think the first video in time, there are three videos. One is on the outer perimeter of the Capitol. They set up these pathetic little fences, and there are six cops, and like 100 MAGA guys come, and they just gradually overwhelm the cops, and the fences go down, and the cops give up, okay? Then higher up in the Capitol on the stairs, there's a thicker line of cops, and they fight furiously. It's not like they're letting the guys in. They're slugging away with these guys. They're getting injured. They're beating the shit out of some of the demonstrators, but there are too many demonstrators, and eventually a couple of them sneak through, and then they overwhelm them. And then the third video is at the top of the stairs, the cops just stand by and let them in. They're just, hey, welcome, okay? And so what do you make of those three things? I think you make up that it was incredibly bad planning. They were overmanned, but it's not like they were because these guys are white, we're not going to beat the shit out of them. They tried to beat the shit out of them. There just weren't enough of them.
Well, some did, some didn't.
Everybody in the line in the second video is there fighting. There's just no second line. They're just all there.
I mean, in defense of the cops, I'll say, first of all, the kind of famous video where they seem to be opening the gates, opening the barrier for them, I think I've been told that's misleading. It's from the back. I think it's more like the cops are surrendering and backing off, and the protesters are opening the barriers.
It's not crazy. Once that's been breached, it's not crazy that they didn't want to have a pitched gun battle in the middle of the Capitol. I mean, the Capitol is a place where citizens, it's usually crowded with people, you know, all day. The cops are used to people roaming around the halls there. It's not. It wasn't crazy. The least violent, least destructive thing to do was to let the guys in, hide the members of Congress, have a strategic retreat, and assume that eventually they'll go away.
Well,
and shoot them if they get really close to the officials.
But there were two kinds of lapses. One is the one you mentioned, planning. There was no plan. And by the way, here's a headline that was in the Washington Post the day before. Headline: pro-Trump forums erupt with violent threats ahead of Wednesday's rally against the 2020 election. Online posters, respond to Trump's prediction of wild day with discussion of potential bloodshed and advice on sneaking guns into D.C. That's a little bit of a signal. For that matter, if you just listen to Bannon's podcast, even though there's no advocacy of violence. I remember listening to it the day before and thinking, man, they better have a battalion there. If they understand what's about to happen.
Now, there are a couple of other advance reports too, I think.
It's just,
just that one.
So there's the lack of planning, and then there are the some individual mysterious lapses. Apparently there was a cop inside the Capitol who was doing a selfie with one of the rioters. And you know, when I first heard,
I think they were trying. They switched strategies from a confrontation strategy to a kill them with kindness strategy. They were sort of treating them like, some people want. I mean, it's another strategy, which is we'll mollify them. Okay, that strategy was foolish too. I think the key thing is, first, there were those warnings, and second, the Defense Department offered to send troops. And guard troops and McCarthy and other people, this may be backfilling now, but they said they pressured the Capitol Police into accepting this, and the guy said he had it under control. So that's the huge mistake, is that it's not like the Pentagon wasn't aware of the threat. It's not like they weren't aware of those articles. They thought maybe they wanted troops, and the Capitol Police turned them down. And why did they do that? I don't know.
Well, I also heard that the mayor of D.C. discouraged, she wanted a low profile, but that in itself is no excuse. I mean, it's possible to have 1,000 cops inside the Capitol building where no one will see them with gas masks and tear gas. And that's what you needed. You needed to have a plan. What happens if they breach the perimeter? Apparently, they literally did not ask themselves that question. If that happens, you do the tear gas, obviously.
Well, they did tear gas them. They did tear gas them.
Oh, in a sporadic, they did not have the resources. In a sporadic,
but you don't want to have a tear gas fight in the Capitol with that's
not in the Capitol building, Mickey.
I think you're wrong. I think they needed to have a strong perimeter with thousands of troops outside the Capitol to stop them from ever getting anywhere near there.
That would be fine too. I'm just saying, if you wanted to oblige the mayor who wanted a low profile, you still have to have a plan for what happens if they breach the perimeter.
Screw the mayor. I didn't realize the mayor said that. What a stupid thing for the mayor to say. If there are these crazy right-wingers coming to town, why does she want a low profile?
What we've established is that there are two different ways to deal with this, and neither was apparently on the planning board. And I just am mystified. But I'm
saying the Defense Department offered this. It's not
right, but why didn't the Capitol Police?
Right,
and here, you know, when I first heard the thing about race, I thought, you know, people saying if they had been black, I thought, oh, do we have to play the race card all the time? But then I started thinking, I certainly don't think police, you know, they said, well, it's just white guys. They won't cause any trouble. But I think, you know, sometimes at a subconscious or unconscious level, yes, cops may be more frightened of black guys than white guys. But I think more interesting here is the ideological angle. I mean, there are a lot of cops who support Trump. And I think a real possibility here is that when they think of a bunch of Trump supporters on the mall, they just don't think of them as a potential enemy. These are their guys. I mean, I don't know what the ideology is of the former head of the Capitol Police who just stepped down and any other people who should have been involved in planning, but I think there's a real possibility that they just don't, at a visceral level, consider these kinds of people a threat for ideological reasons.
It's possible. My first reaction when I heard that theory was, well, that's not my impression of Capitol Police isn't that they're Trumpists so much as they're these good old boys, you know, the Southern good old boys, and which isn't quite the same as MAGA activists. But no, it's not implausible. The test case that could be why there is the failure of planning. The test case would be: has there ever been a large black demonstration like this where they did call out massive troops? And I can't think of one. I mean, did Stokely Carmichael or Malcolm X ever have a huge demonstration in Washington? Oh, there's the Million Man March, but that was completely peaceful. There was Martin Luther King. That was obviously going to be peaceful. They did have police. They did have police stashed away. Yeah.
I mean, I happened to see a long time ago an old, I think it was a Meet the Press, right shortly before the March on Washington, and Martin Luther King was one of the guests. And I could not believe you wouldn't believe it. To go back, how freaked out these white guys on Meet the Press, okay, these are like journalists, were apparently, but there's even a guy who says, you know, something kind of ominous about a large number of Negroes assembling on the, you know, I mean, they were, I'm not kidding, it's an amazing piece of footage. And a testament to how much we've changed.
But something where, yeah, I guess that's right. And they did have cops, but they didn't have them up front. Mm-hmm. Thank God. How would they react if they had been a huge Black Lives Matter protest? Is, I guess, the key question. The opposite.
I
had a lot of troops
been
at the White House, but that was the White House. How would they have reacted at the Capitol?
I don't know. It's interesting how different a scenario that is, because I think of Black Lives Matter as like a bunch of, as you know, I mean, they would have anticipated, like, suppose Antifa shows up with Black Lives Matter, right? That would be the fear. And Antifa would. But I almost think of those as more discrete things than I think of as, I don't mean that most Trump supporters or even most people who came to this rally, which is, of course, a small subset of a highly motivated subset of Trump supporters, are up for the kind of thing we saw in the Capitol. It was a subset of a subset that did this. At the same time, I do think there's a little more, I think of it as more a continuum between the hardest right, you know, the Boogaloo Boys and the Proud Boys, and, you know,
the Proud Boys are nowhere near the hardest right.
Yeah, well, that's the alarming thing. I mean, one thing to say is, look, let's face it, thousands of people breached the perimeter. Thousands didn't make it inside the building, but thousands of people went beyond where they knew they were supposed to go.
Well, my view of the demo is, and I've been in demos that turned violent, and the vast majority of people here, and I've seen videos, they were not there for violence. They were there to make a statement, and share the people they agreed with to share a day. And then there are a few hundred people who are really like bring knives and have plans to breach the wall and how to get inside, and they bring pickaxes, and they're the sort of vanguard. Mm-hmm. And then in between, like right after them, and you can see them in the video, they're the people who are sort of curious and say, oh, so we're going in the Capitol, okay, well, I'll go along, why not. And I was once one of those people on the left, you know. I wasn't mm-hmm. for violence, but, you know, hey, if we're going down the street, we're going down the street. So I don't necessarily think there were thousands of really violent people. I think
no, I didn't
takes,
say that. I said thousands
takes, like,
of 100 people
or so.
Thousands of people, went on to forbidden territory. I don't know how many made it into the Capitol, but everyone, I'm sure, was aware that the Capitol had been breached quite illegally. Nobody could have not seen, you know, people trying to smash windows and all that
stuff.
Well,
what are they supposed to do? Go in and pull their guys back out? I mean, they were sitting there.
I'm just saying everyone who entered the Capitol,
they didn't think, hey, the Capitol's open for business as usual. Yeah, no, they didn't think that.
And there were hundreds, maybe as, I don't know, maybe as many as 1,000 in the Capitol. But so I don't know where we go for here. I mean, I will say, notwithstanding everything I've said, I think, you know, a number of Democrats are being careless in the way they're characterizing Trump's contribution to this. You know, the way they use the word incite with respect to insurrection and so on is too loose for my taste. And I'll even kind of defend Rudy. His line about trial by combat in context, not that bad, actually.
What was the context?
He's saying, look, we'll present our facts and they can present their facts, trial by combat. He's using it as a metaphor
which is worse,
not as bad as it sounds out of context.
I guess the other thing we haven't discussed is Biden and Harris's reaction. And I thought my line was, even though your point about the latent racism of the Capitol Police may be true.
I didn't say that. But
okay, the possible latent racism.
I think the ideological thing is more interesting.
Okay. But
I'm not even saying it's necessary racism if at a subconscious level a cop is more afraid of a black guy than a white guy. I don't get into defining racism. But go ahead.
I thought they have a slam dunk killer point. Trump's people ransacked the seat of American government. He's responsible in some sense, if not in that speech, over his setting up the situation, and bad on Trump. We're going to restore normalcy and order, damn it, and we're going to prosecute all these people, and that's a winner, 100% winner. Instead, they talk about how this shows there are two systems of justice in society, and we saw the way BLM was treated, and we saw the way these people were treated, and they make a divisive sort of PC left-wing point about two systems of government, and that's just a terrible, harbinger of how they're going to react if they keep it up. When they're in government, I mean, why miss a unifying moment and make a partisan moment in a divisive speech? And it also, it's bullshit because aside from the point you made, there wasn't a lot of systemic racism in the way that the white cops tried to hold back the crowd, at least in that one video. They were trying to beat the shit out of them. And they killed one of them. How many Black Lives Matter protesters were killed? I don't think any.
I think some. Well, if you count the guys that were killed by the guy in Kenosha, they weren't in. I don't think they were Antifa. They were something at, and they were at a Black Lives Matter protest. But the I largely agree. I mean, I just had the thought today listening to Biden. Like, I mean, I hope everybody understands this country's in a very bad place. And the forces in motion are clearly going to make it worse for reasons we could get into. But, and I just was thinking today, I wish Biden, when he's speaking, would have in mind as his audience, yes, Democrats, but also have in mind these, like, imagine these Trump supporters who may think the election was stolen, but, like, aren't bad people. Think of them as part of your audience, because when he was speaking, there was no indication that he thought of them as part of his audience. I mean, he goes through the we're going to unify the country thing. But as you said, he says things that are clearly going to make it harder to win those people over. And it's as if he's still thinking, like, I've got to speak to my base. Why do you have to speak to your base?
Right.
You've got the nomination. What's that?
Right. It's like he was still campaigning.
Yeah. It's like, it's, well, not only campaigning for the nomination almost, as opposed to the general, right? But certainly not as if he's already president and can relax for a couple of years.
I mean, it's possible. I'm trying to think of why he would make that mistake other than that Kamala Harris has always been too intimidated by left-wing Twitter. And too intent on proving her bona fides to the left. And one thing might be that they were introducing some Justice Department officials, and maybe they thought Merrick Garland was too centrist somehow, and they were worried that the left will oppose some of their cabinet nominees, so they were throwing a rhetorical bone to the left, anticipating these cabinet fights. Which is silly. They're going to get all their nominees confirmed. They have control of the Senate now. It's not something they had to do, and they didn't have to announce those nominees today. They could have, if it's a national emergency, they could put it off till tomorrow, and give their unifying speech, and then nominate Merrick Garland. It was still stupid, but I'm just trying to think of why they might have made a mistake.
I was kind of thinking that they were holding off on some nominations because they wanted to see whether they would be controlling the Senate.
Well, everybody thinks that.
Yeah, but there's no signs that was the case. They didn't choose any lefties after they knew they were controlling the Senate. They did not. I mean,
I think did they? Have
I mean,
any
they didn't choose Bernie for labor. They didn't choose Elizabeth Warren for attorney general.
Right.
So well, that's the kind of thing I thought they might do once they knew they were controlling the Senate, but they didn't.
Well, no, because if you lose if you have a tenuous zero seat majority in the Senate. And Biden has said this explicitly. He said, I was going to appoint Bernie, then we decided not to. Because he can't risk that seat. If he loses that seat.
Is it not? Who's the governor? It's not a Democratic governor in Vermont?
No.
What about Elizabeth Warren? Wouldn't a Democratic governor be appointing the replacement?
I'm sorry. I'm thinking Massachusetts is a Republican governor. Vermont, I don't know. But the point is, you could still lose.
Yeah, yeah. No, I take that point.
There was a freak election. Martha Moakley, or whatever her name was, lost her slam dunk election in Massachusetts, and Obama lost his filibuster-proof majority. I mean, that's seared into everybody's mind. They're not going to risk that.
Okay.
Did they have any doubts that Merrick Garland would be approved? I don't know.
I can't. Well, they certainly can't now, but I it's hard to believe that Mitch McConnell, even if Republicans controlled the Senate, would squash him a second time. That would be pretty much rubbing salt in the wounds. Not that that's beyond him.
What are the larger forces that you think are still putting the country in danger? Because I always have the well, America's America, we'll get over this. It'll be over by Thanksgiving attitude.
Well, you know, these are cliches by now, but, you know, there are just separate, we're living in separate realities. You know, it's like if you wanted to go about persuading some of the Stop the Steal people that it isn't a slam dunk case that there was some kind of orchestrated fraud that made the difference, which is the belief that Bannon and Rudy and Trump have been promulgating, even though Bannon knows better. What would you do? How do you reach them? They're in their own ecosystem. And one reason I don't like, by the way, this, you know, the social media platforms playing Big Brother with the right is they're slowly chasing them onto their own social media platforms.
Oh, sure. There's a big one today. Dan Bongino, who is a right-wing sort of controversialist, has abandoned Twitter for Parler after taking an ownership stake in Parler. And so he brings a huge following. And, you know, 20 more people like him, and you're talking Parler's a going deal.
There's an alternative to Twitter. There's an alternative to YouTube. Now, is Gab the Facebook alternative? Parler's the Twitter alternative. Rumble's the YouTube alternative. Is Gab the Facebook alternative or what?
No, Gab and Parler are both Twitter alternatives.
So anyway, I don't think that's good. But also you just see, you know, once you have a polarized country, the incentive for everyone on social media is to gratify to elevate their status within their own tribe. And so you see them both saying uncritical things and building these alternative realities. And I want to emphasize, I think, you know, the resistance has been living in its alternative reality and hasn't been very good at appraising the world objectively.
You don't think that Jonathan Turley's idea of a commission to, 2-year commission to look thoroughly at the 2020 election, will do the job? I think it's a good idea. I don't think it'll do the job, but I think it'll help.
I suppose maybe is there a commission that both would trust? I almost think it's so bad that whether they trusted it would depend on what it wound up saying.
You'd have to get them to sign off ahead of time. Turley goes in, or I think it was Turley, goes into what was wrong with the selection of previous commissions. And you'd have to find like the most responsible gadfly on either side somehow. I don't know if that person exists. Probably does, I agree. But and also didn't this sort of pierce the bubbles? I mean, this is an event that surely the people, Bannon's people, have to recognize that, hey, maybe we went a little too far. We've heard.
Nah. Yeah. That's not where they are. I mean, he's at this awkward moment where he has to start kind of conceding that his 100% confident guarantees that Trump would serve a second term are starting to look a little dubious. But he's not even giving, I mean, he has hopes that these states, I mean, remember, he and allied people are responsible for putting the political pressure on that led individual people and groups of people in these states like Arizona, Pennsylvania, to signal that they wanted to take a break and reconsider and so on, even though he never got an actual state to do that. And he wants to continue on that front. I mean, you could see he was crestfallen when he had Eastman on yesterday, Trump's attorney, one of Trump's attorneys. And Eastman said, you know, I think, you know, given that Trump's statement this morning that there will be an orderly transition, I think we have to, you know, concede that Biden's going to be the next president. And Bannon, you know, he's like, you know, but when you say that, like, you know, I think Bannon knows the truth has to come to his followers eventually. He just doesn't want to be the one who breaks the news to them. But anyway, he's turning this, by and large, he's changing the narrative to the long term. He's saying, okay, what we're seeing now is an attempt to toxify Trump, which is true. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, and various people are taking the opportunity to get off the Trump bandwagon, Republicans. And so far, you haven't taken the opportunity to regret your vote, but I'll press you on that in the parrot room. Mickey's vote, I'm writing down. You know, he's preparing for the long haul. He's preparing.
I should say I don't regret my first vote. My second vote is in play.
Okay.
Given how Trump has behaved, I would not. The prospect of 4 years of this is pretty horrifying.
We will discuss this in the parrot room. Although you could argue, yeah, more people should have voted for him this time so he wouldn't have done this stop. He would have just won and not done the stop to steal.
Well, that's the argument. The argument is he's behaving crazy because he lost, and if he'd won, he wouldn't be so crazy.
Yeah, but he's been crazy enough. So anyway, no, Bannon, he's in it for the long haul. I mean, one question is, we can get into the details of this. Does this make it more or less likely that Bannon gets pardoned? I think you could argue less. And if he's in jail, he'll have trouble leading anything. But he is preparing, and his influence has really grown considerably from where it was a couple of years ago anyway. In the course of all this, he's now got a big audience and
I think you're his biggest fan, Bob. I don't think he has that much influence.
You know, it's funny. I was, who was it who I was saying? It was some lefty. Oh, yeah. It was Aaron Maté. I said to him after I taped something with him, you know, I was mentioning Bannon's podcast. He was saying, yeah, lately I've been hearing all these people listening to Bannon's podcast. What is it? And he's not talking about Trumpists, I don't think. But his audience has manifestly grown, not as much as he claims, but I'm telling you, he's been at the heart of this thing. I think he's been just about as important as anyone in making this a thing. And you know, he's looking to the long term. He's saying right now, ostensibly, he's trying to keep Trump the leader of Trumpism. Whereas you know that Josh Hawley in his heart would be happy for Trump to get so toxified that he would just go away. Bannon is still on Trump's side. But again, Bannon is still jockeying for a pardon. So who knows whether Bannon wouldn't be happy to jettison Trump 2 weeks from now.
At this point, I'm not. I mean, the guy who came out smelling like a rose this week is Tom Cotton because he refused to go along with the Hawley-Cruz initiative, and he seemed to be consistent in that he calls out the National Guard in all situations. He would call them out for BLM, and he would call them out for these guys. So he looked like a great statesman.
I have to enjoy Ted Cruz's consistently bad sense of timing. I mean, 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, he's at the Republican convention. He's decided he's going to carry the banner of true conservatism. You know, he gets up and gives that speech, and Trump just totally outplays him. He's drowned by booze, and then Trump comes out early, and people celebrate, and Cruz has to ultimately suck up to Trump and decide he's on the bandwagon. And then he pulls it, he jumps on the Hawley bandwagon, and then, you know, Wednesday happens, and half of the bandwagon deserts the bandwagon. But Cruz has already made the speech in the Senate by, you know, the protesters slash rioters gave him just enough time, you know, to indelibly associate himself with Trump. He is such a jerk.
Couldn't happen to a nicer guy, but I do think there have been times over the last couple of months when I thought I would take Cruz. It's so crazy that even
Cruz is so horrible.
I'd rather have Cruz than Nikki Haley.
That's a tough one, but Cruz, the thing Cruz has is a lot of actual Joseph McCarthy in him, in addition to physically resembling Joseph McCarthy.
Isn't the law, if you were writing the dream script of the anti-Trump forces, and it does seem possible, the final shoe to drop is that Melania leaves him, right? I mean, if you're looking for the last act of the madness of Donald Trump, she has to be thinking, what the fuck have I gotten myself into, right?
I assume there's a pretty good chance she'll leave him shortly anyway after he leaves the White House. But who knows what their relationship is like? You know, there are women who wouldn't have married that guy in the first place. Let me just put it that way. And I have no insight into the mind of a woman who wanted to marry him.
I can imagine Trump's webpage on Match.com when he's single again and, you know, looking for a mate. That would be a good parody. Okay, or a bad parody.
I think I want to think Tinder when I think Trump, not Match.com.
He has good photos and bad photos, Bob. I guess he'd pick the good photos.
So we've been doing this a little more than an hour. It's a lot. I mean, we haven't even talked about Georgia, which we should talk about, and we should.
We haven't talked about Georgia, and there's one topic we could talk about in the Parrot Room, which is, Bob, the resurgence of the virus came from China theory, which you have dismissed as crude propaganda.
No, I haven't dismissed the virus came from China. You mean the virus came from a lab, and you're wrong. Yes. You're wrong. I have not dismissed the virus escaped from a lab. I have dismissed the virus designed as a bioweapon and escaped from a lab.
Well, but the Nicholson-Baker takes an intermediate position, which is the virus was designed in the lab, not as a bioweapon, but so they could test out their defenses against it, and then it escaped. But that it was humanly modified to make it more lethal.
That theory I haven't dismissed, but you're right. I'm writing down virus. Oh, we haven't talked about COVID generally in vaccines.
And there's the COVID vaccine thing. Do we want to give the vaccine just to everybody? We've given up. You know, last week we were debating, well, shouldn't category 1C take the place of category 1B in the priority list, and they should flip them? And this week, it's become clear that the categories are just slowing everything down, and there's a big debate between de Blasio and Cuomo, where de Blasio says, I have all this vaccine, it's going to expire, just let me give it to people who aren't in the priority list. And Cuomo's saying, no, you have to give it an order. And Cuomo's obviously completely wrong.
Well, not only that, isn't Cuomo, like, criminalizing,
Oh, yeah, he said they're going to fine them hundreds of thousands of dollars if they give it to people who aren't authorized. It's insane. Cuomo's gone insane.
I'm not a fan of either Cuomo, brother.
But on the other hand, California, which supposedly doesn't have this dispute, is doing even worse than New York. And so there's that dispute, and then there's the dispute of should we give everybody the first dose of the virus and not worry so much about the second dose, Derek Lowe, a blogger who everybody follows, points out, it's not just that it creates the risk that the immunity will be lower because the first dose gives you some immunity, but it doesn't give you the 95% immunity. But also, apparently, if you give one dose, it increases the possibility of a mutant that's resistant to all the vaccines.
If you give one and only one dose.
So it could, I've never understood the math of that, but I assume they've gone through it. And that would be a disaster for humanity if a lethal, resistant dose got around. So.
Yeah, it's a tough call because I think the reason Britain is going with one dose only for some people is they want to get this more transmittable variant under control. And there is a case for that and arguing that now is the time to act, and get as many people inoculated as possible. But, I don't know.
But on the first issue, should we have these categories or should we just give it to people? I'm always alert for instances where left and right agree. And there was a total left-right agreement. We had Michelle Goldberg and people on the right saying, fuck with these categories. Let's just give the vaccine to people. And Peg O'Brien's the guy on the right. And not, let's have a big, big mass vaccination sites. Everybody shows up. Yes, we try to give it to the frontline workers first, but basically we just want to vaccinate as many people as possible. And it's basically everybody is for that now. And the argument is that Cuomo is in the thrall of the public employee unions who are insisting that their members get it first. But he's completely on the he's at the losing end of the horse show. He has 85% of the public against him, 90%.
I still say Biden, and this, of course, would be a Biden who is paying more attention to actually healing the country than he seems to be. But as I said previously, I think Biden long ago should have said, police officers should be in phase one. And they should be. I mean, they more than anyone are encounter people on a totally unpredictable basis that they may have to handle physically. And are probably not, wearing masks and observing social distancing,
He did announce today that he's going to do the first dose thing. He's not going to worry that much about the second dose. He's going to distribute all.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
The thing that somebody is saying could lead to a super virus?
He said, I'm not completely sure. He said, we're not going to hold any vaccine in reserve. We're going to give out all the vaccine as first doses. Now, is that adopting the British strategy? It seems like it to me, doesn't it? On the other hand, maybe he thinks, well, we're just confident there's going to be enough vaccine made that we're going to have it around for the second dose. But, you know, Britain, they're giving the second dose of a different vaccine. You take the first dose of one vaccine, and that seems completely crazy.
I admire their adventurousness.
I can't believe Biden is committing America to that.
No. On the other hand, the official protocols for these things err so far on the side of safety. You know, and partly that's something you have to do to not stir up the anti-vaxxers any more than is necessary and to reassure people. But I doubt that Britain's doing anything that you know, is actually hugely risky, but who knows.
Megan, two minor points to tangents to this. Meghan McCardle said she was in the hospital recently for some other ailment, and talking to the nurses, it was clear that they want to take the vaccine. They just want to take it 2 months from now. They don't want to take it. It's not like they're anti-vaxxers. They just want you to go first. And she, that infuriated her, and she thought, well, we should put the hammer down and say, we give you a chance and if you turn down your chance, you go to the back of the line. Well, under most scenarios, there is no back of the line. There's a mass vaccination event. If you show up in line, you get the vaccine. The second thing is the rich have adopted this strategy, sort of without government approval. I mean, there is a pharmacy around here that has a list, supposedly. Everybody thinks it's true. You get on the list, they will give you the vaccine. I assume they're giving the surplus vaccine after they've used whatever they have on the priorities, and maybe they get it from somebody else. But, you know, rich people are signing up.
Well, I'm available if they want to vaccinate me, but as of now, I think I'm in phase four or something.
I'm with the nurses. I'm like,
you should be able to give away your place in line. I would take your place in line.
I know friends who want to sell their place in line, and I say, no, you can't do that. There is no, it's not like a ticket to a rock concert.
Mickey, we should go before long. It's been well over an hour.
You're just getting started, man.
Yeah, but, you know, there's a whole parrot room to go.
Okay, I have one parting shot for we can discuss in the parrot room.
What is it?
Victoria Nuland.
Oh, I was going to say
she was just appointed to an important job in the State Department. And
that's Bob Bate. Yeah.
It's Bob Bate, and also, why did Tony Blinken go along with that? Unless he is more blobby than I thought he was.
If you think he's not that blobby, you haven't been reading the non-zero newsletter. We did.
No, I read the non-zero newsletter. It didn't paint him as that blobby. He was like a
B-. We gave him a C-minus on the Progressive Realism report card.
I didn't realize it was that low, but
yes,
could have been worse.
And we were grading on a curve.
Could have been worse. I've gotten worse grades than that, Bob.
It could have been worse. I think we gave Michelle Flournoy a D+, but anyway, she didn't pan out. But no, Blinken, I will talk about that in the parrot room.
Okay.
It doesn't surprise me, but yes, it's one of a number of bad signs.
Okay.
That there is some, in effect, some neocon in him.
We could talk about that in the parrot.
And also that he just, it's not the only sign that he has a kind of contempt for non-blob, foreign policy types, who are Democrats. He just views them with complete disregard. Now, the good news is that
maybe he's returning the favor of how they regard him.
I mean, it could have been, he hasn't gotten that much blowback from anybody but me. It could have been worse. She's not Deputy Secretary of State. That went to Wendy Sherman, and she's good. So I shouldn't get too upset. Is there anything quickly we want to say about Georgia? We can say more about that in the parrot room, but is there any top line thing you want to say? I'll say more about the foreign policy stuff.
No, it's just, Trump, McConnell is to blame. I don't know how he miscalculated. Karl Rove, I hope, is unmasked as a complete fool. unless because he ran, had them. He got like a huge sum of money from Wall Street to beat back the Democrats, and he spent it on apparently really stupid ads about how Raphael Warnock was a socialist and a, you know, friend of Castro, and voters are more sophisticated than Karl Rove gives them credit. And it was a total loser campaign. And then the question I raised is, did Karl Rove really want to win? I mean, you know, he's a longtime proponent of immigration amnesty, and by losing, he made immigration amnesty a lot more possible. We can talk about that in the
past. That's, you know.
Anyway.
Right up there with, did the Capitol Police intentionally let the protesters? Of course, there's two variants of that. There's, did the deep state want to let the protesters in to tarnish Trump?
Right. Right.
Or, you know, are the Capitol Police pro Trump? There's two variants.
And, or were they just led astray by their mistaken stereotype of what the anti-Trumpers were like? And most of them fit their bill, but there was this vanguard of a few really violent ones, and that's the ones the police are supposed to be worried about. So.
Which was 100% predictable. Look, it could have been a lot worse given the lack of planning. You could have had a bunch of people actually killed by several crazy guys who managed to get like assault weapons in there or something. I mean, they were so lax that any number of things could have happened.
That has happened before, you know.
What, in the Capitol? You mean the Puerto Rican?
There was a big shootout in 75 with the Puerto Ricans, yeah.
That was in the 50s, wasn't it?
It was in the 50s? I guess it was the 50s.
Yeah, I think it was Eisenhower. The general point
is all these institutions are completely inadequately defended. I mean, it's sort of charming, and it's nice that people can go to the Capitol and just walk up to the Capitol building and go in and walk right up to the White House fence within a baseball's throw of the Oval Office and look at the White House. But the White House especially is totally indefensible. I mean, there's no fucking way.
Well, since Oklahoma, they have a barrier that keeps vehicles at a certain different distance. Since the Oklahoma bombing.
Bazookas, mortars, I mean, it's a sitting duck.
This is a true story. This is a true story. In 1992, not long after Clinton was elected, I'm walking by the White House with my wife. There's Bill Clinton on the lawn. She puts her hands through it and she shakes his hand. I swear. I've made your point, but this is of course a different question. This was a special, you know, there should have been special temporary defenses.
But my point is that they're thinking sort of low grade in a way that they should be. They got to up their thinking about what the threat is. The proof was, you know, they had this guy, this crazy guy who jumped the fence with a knife and ran into the White House and actually got into the White House with a knife. Okay. He got in the front door and then they apprehended him. But, their defenses, you know, everybody said, well, they have missiles, they have robot-controlled guns. No, they had a guy with a dog. Okay, that's...
Was this like late 80s?
The White House was a guy with a dog. That was a few years ago.
There was one in the late 80s.
And this was recent, after all the upgrades. And they had a guy with a dog, and he didn't release the dog because he wasn't sure the dog would attack the right person. So it was just totally inadequate.
There's a Leon Wieseltier joke about this, but I'll save that for the Parrot Room because we really have to. Let me tell you all the things that are going to happen in the Parrot Room. First of all, Mickey's going to get his guitar out, and he's going to play a Bob Dylan song. And by the way,
I'm not.
Okay, well, whether you do or not, I have more to say about Bob Dylan and Linda Ronstadt, a little compare and contrast, and Bob Dylan is not going to fare well.
I was just going to try to fool the YouTube algorithm into seeing if it suppressed us for playing a Bob Dylan song.
No, I can tell you it wouldn't. It suppressed a Parrot Room video because we played, what did we play? Anyway, it was a Bob Dylan song.
We played an outtake from Bob Dylan, which has nevertheless been released and is copyrighted.
Yeah, but it
was fair use, but you have no appeal once the YouTube takes it down.
Yeah, but if it's not an officially recorded copyrighted version, I don't think you have trouble. So you can play your guitar.
But it is a copyright violation because both the song.
Yeah, but I'm saying YouTube's algorithm won't pick it up if it's you playing the guitar.
Well, we don't know. That's what I was going to test.
Well, then we'll find that out in the Parrot
Room. How sophisticated is the YouTube algorithm?
Okay.
If you're willing to risk the podcast.
And by the way, if you're not already a Parrot Room Patreon, you should go to patreon.com/Parrot Room and, After that, you can either watch the video or get it in your podcast app or whatever. So we're going to talk about in the Parrot Room. I'm going to play another clip from the band and show. I think we should talk more. I definitely want to talk more about the impeachment scenario. You're going to play Bob Dylan. Maybe a little more about whether Steve Bannon will be pardoned. Foreign policy, Victoria Nuland, fine. I'm going to ask you a branding question about my newsletter. We're going to start a paid version, although there will still be a less frequent free version available. The newsletter that you can sign up for at nonzero.org, and I need to get your advice on that.
There's a little bit of Epstein-Barr news.
In the sense of the disease or in the sense of Jeffrey and William?
In the sense of William and Jeffrey. Not big, but we can talk about it.
I should have led with that. If I had known that, I would have led with that.
It's not big.
I'm writing it down. Epstein-Barr. And other stuff in the Parrot Room. Any other critical?
No, nothing critical.
Nothing critical. Okay. So then, you know, I feel bad about my reaction to your guitar, Mickey. I didn't mean. I was just a little surprised. There's an air of somberness about.
Don't worry about my hurt feelings, Bob.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
I know they don't amount to more than a hill of beans in this crazy world.
You and I don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world. But still, we will persist and be in the Parrot Room. You are at Kaus Mickey on Twitter. I'm at Robert Ryder. Your newsletter is Kaus Files.
Substack.
Although if they just search for Kaus Files, they'll probably find it.
There's another Kaus Files, but you have to look for Substack.
Okay, so Google Kaus Files and Substack. Mine, you can go either way. Just nonzero.org, go there and sign up, or Google Nonzero and Kaus Files. People should smash the like button so that we will be within two orders of magnitude of the number of likes that Steve Bannon gets on his thing. If you want to fight for a better America, that's what you need to do.
And you are looking more like Steve Bannon, so at some point... At some point, you could kidnap him if you want to bring this movement to a halt and just appear on his show as Steve Bannon and slowly steer the movement back into sanity. That's my script. I'm in Hollywood. I'm going to have to write a script for.
I don't think even Hollywood would buy that, but thanks for the thought. Okay. So we will see you, in the Parrot Room and then next week.
Yes. See you there.
Wait, have your parrot say something. To
see you in the Parrot Room, Bob.
Folks, you'll get more of that in the Parrot Room itself. Okay, we'll see you.